Organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. And when you're on that front page, you're going to see something that says Amazon Smile. And what the Amazon Smile program is, once you sign up, every time you make a purchase on Amazon, a portion of the proceeds will go to an organization that you choose. So you can go to Amazon Smile, because you know you go to Amazon, because we know Amazon numbers. Go there and make sure you sign up for PACTS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. So that way, every time you make a purchase, a portion of that proceed will go to an organization that is boots on the ground helping to improve the black community. So once again, that's Amazon Smile. Sign up for PACTSINC and make sure you go to their website at www.pactsinc.org and make sure you go into the Learning Center tab and check out all the wonderful resources that they have, from audio to political information to books to survival information, legal cases, and videos. Once again, www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, my co-host Patrick Irvin, Shelby Davis, Queen Candace, and Enigma Self, all of our wonderful podcasters. And we want to give a special shout out to Ms. Shakara Jenkins. She does a lot of good work for us behind the scenes, and we want to make sure that we give her love. So thank you, Shakara, for all that you do for us. So make sure you check us out. Hey, yo, Pat. Tell them about the app.
Yeah, that was real, like, radio-like, what you just did.
Like, oh, yes, that's good. That's good.
You sound
good.
Like you've been, like, practicing that in the mirror or something for a while. But anyways, so we got an app, and you should go and get the app. So if you got an Android device, go to the App Store on the device and type in Freedom Train Network, and you'll see the very familiar train with the logo. Cop that, and once you get that, you'll have immediate access to all of the Freedom Train shows. You'll have regular updates coming when we bring new shows on board, when the shows we have on board drop content. All of that stuff is there. We'll be able to give you those push notifications to let you know what's going on, as well as, you know, getting regular updates about not just what's going on with the shows and things like that, but various different things that are going on in the community that we might want to update you guys about. So definitely go and check out that. If you do not have an Android, you need to figure out what happened in your life somewhere, because somebody didn't love you appropriately. You didn't get enough hugs. I'm not sure what happened to make you want to support Apple.
Hey, the marketing.
Whatever it was,
hold up. Stop talking bad about Apple. I got stock at Apple. You better stop that now, okay?
Hey, look, well, I don't know what's going on with you and your stock. Look, we just had Mental Health Awareness Month, and I think it's time we bring awareness to
hold up.
But yeah, basically though, if you got an Apple product, Apple Store is real difficult.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's really the problem, and they're running into a lot of legal problems right now with the way they manage their store. And then on top of that, the Apple coding is just totally different from everything else, because everybody want to be unique. So as long as they're being silly with their store, I'm not going to bother trying to figure out their coding. That's just me being 100%
right
with you.
Right. But you can subscribe to our podcast on the plethora of the podcast outlets, whatever your favorite is, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, Radio Public, Stitcher, all of whatever you like. Just subscribe, Freedom Train Radio, Freedom Train Podcast Series, and therefore you can start to rebuild yourself up and get all that love that you was missing.
There you go.
Right, right. So today, we're going to have a good discussion today because we're talking about a mix of finances, community building, faith, and just personal building as well. So our guest today is a gentleman that I met as I started my businesses here in Tallahassee. We've collaborated in the past. He's definitely been a good person that I can learn from. We've had numerous conversations about stocks, about finances. He's definitely been there for me when I needed him, just to help me learn and to help me grow. And I appreciate him for that, so I want to make sure we have him on our podcast so we can help spread his message, but also to have a good conversation about building wealth, about finances, about community building, and how we can all just put all of that together to make sure that we can take care of ourselves and our community. So his brother, Eric Thomas, who is a highly influential pastor, is a keynote speaker and financial markets instructor with over 25 years of ministerial and business experience. Brother Eric has conducted financial trainings all over the country and performed roles such as radio TV host and special contributor, as well as a brand evangelist and a spokesperson. So with that being said, I want everybody to put your hands together for Brother Eric Thomas. Wow. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you.
No, man. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate it. No, just you definitely have helped me out. Definitely helped me out. And I'm always appreciative of anybody who takes the time out of their busy schedule to give me any type of information, any type of guidance and anything. And you've been more than grateful. Conversations that you've had has helped me improve as a learning stock trader and just putting things into practice to help me make sure my personal finances together. So, no, thank you.
Man, listen, if we're too busy as activists, we are to help each other. We're way too busy. We're preoccupied with something that is nonsense. To say thank you for that, it's my reasonable service. Thank you for finding me worthy, man, just to share a little bit of the things that I know with you.
It's definitely no problem. So I would like for our audience to get to know you a little better. So Pat, you already know you got the first question. Let's kick this thing off.
So I got a question for you, Joseph, before I ask my question to Mr. Thomas. Never mind, I'll ask it later, because I feel like it'll be more impactful if I ask it later in the show.
Okay.
But, I'm giving the audience members something to look forward to later on in the show. That's what I'm doing right
you,
now.
You know, hey man, if you didn't do it like this, you wouldn't be you.
You know, I know that you're a hater, so that was meant with malicious intent, but I'm going to take it as a compliment.
There you go.
And that was a bar. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into it. So, Mr. Brother Eric Thomas, not to be confused with the hip-hop preacher dude, the one that was chastising, talking about the children. No, this is not that one. This is another one that is actually useful. So.
Stop that.
Patrick.
What, was that shade? My fault. All right. No disrespect to that other one. But we talking to, you know what, I was going to do it again. All right, so. Let us know, because Joe always gives the bios, and we appreciate them because they really do get people, interested in who the guest is and what's going on and why they should care. But, I always like to come back around and ask for a little bit more information. So, if you could give your elevator speech to the audience to let them know, who you are and what you do. Who is Eric Thomas? And what led you to take the path that you've taken?
Sure. Man, every introduction that I give of myself, whether I'm on a platform or in a radio show like this, podcast, I always introduce myself first as a father. Let me tell you why. And I have five amazingly gorgeous daughters from the ages of 25 to 17. Fatherhood is one of the most humbling things that you can be, right? Just because I see it as a way of having a father in your life. It's almost how we see our fathers is how we interpret God. And I know you have a vast audience. Whoever you consider to be your God, fatherhood, parenthood, even motherhood as well, but fatherhood in particular is just one of those things, those roles we play in life that we really, that's how we see divinity. So I start with that first. And anything I'm talking about, and most of the time is in a professional setting like this. And people ask, what does that have to do with your profession? Because I say, I am a father first.
Mm-hmm.
And father of five amazing daughters. I gave the ages from 25 to 17. Simone, Erica, Lauren, Destiny, and Imani. The grandfather, believe it or not, I know I look very young, but I'm the grandfather of four dashingly handsome grandsons. Jaden, Jordan, Dylan, and Ethan. And everything I am and everything I do it with them in heart and do it with them in mind, even in the marketplace. So, yeah, that's who I am. Before a businessman, before a man, I used to be a pastor. I don't pastor a church anymore. I'm still a man of faith. I still do speak at churches. I'm a father first, man. That's my greatest accomplishment in life. But I've been blessed to do things in the marketplace as far as business and finance are concerned. And what led me to take that route was just falling on my face, man. I had a pivotal shift in my life in 2008. The market crash of 2008 changed my life in a way that I'm grateful. I didn't understand it then. Going through several series of homelessness. And I figured I was going to either continue to pout or perform. And I knew that I had to, first of all, come into knowledge of the money world to put out a different output. And I have no business background. I didn't go to school for business. What most people are, successful entrepreneurs are, who are very successful, they're self-made. Lots of trial and error. And that's what the word entrepreneur means. It actually, the French word means a risk taker. And, man, I have just taken risk after risk after risk after risk with trial and error and lots of wins, lots of losses. But I've educated myself in a way that where I want to become an advocate, a resource in the marketplace. So I want to start giving back because it's never about me. It's always about us. It's always
right.
About
us. Right. All right. And that's, I admire that, though. I'm not a father yet. I know Pat is a father, and I know he talks about it all the time. So it's something I'm definitely looking forward to, but that, I understand. We all understand the impact that my father can have, especially a active father who wants to be there, who loves to be there, and is actively giving to the household. So definitely respect to that. Because because I know most of my life growing up in the media images and the messages that were put out, even though that's not what I saw, because I saw black men taking care of their families. But I just think it's important that we continue to reiterate, because we have to still fight those stereotypical media, those negative media messages that I put out there. So definitely appreciate you saying that.
And I appreciate you saying that, Brother Joseph, and I'm sure Patrick, who is a father as well. Society has given, especially men of color, those who are fathers, some bad rap, man, that some of it is, most of it is undeserving. Most of it is just cultural labeling. When I first started my company, our mantra back then was brand yourself so nobody can label you. And it's absolutely true. It's just taking ownership of your narrative. And I thought, yeah, we get to do that. We do have that freedom. I do know that.
Right. Right. So I want to get into financial intelligence. Because you just gave us a glimpse of you finding yourself, redefining yourself, and building yourself up as a businessman after the 08 market crash. And I know financial intelligence had a lot to do with that. So in our community, we're now preaching financial intelligence on a mass scale, but growing up, that was nothing that I heard about. I know my father would just say, save your money, save your money. I wish he would have made me save my money, but he didn't. But financial intelligence is what we need. So from your experience and your perspective, why is financial intelligence important? And why is it important to not just have it, but improve on the knowledge that you have as far as financial intelligence?
Sure. The difference between poverty, rich, and wealth, the only divider is financial intelligence. It's not, it is not, and I've said this, traveling around this, God bless the country saying this, it's not about work ethic, and that's a part of it. That's a very small part of it. I said recently to someone that 74% of U.S. citizens live paycheck to paycheck, and I asked, why do you think that is? I was in Louisville, Kentucky, teaching a class, and a man shouted out, that's because Americans are lazy. Now, I had a very scripted presentation, but I got off of my presentation for 5 minutes to really lean into him, because I had to go defend my grandmother and my grandfathers who got up before the sun. They beat the sun up, right, and worked in fields as we would kind of say entrepreneurs. They owned their own business. My grandfathers were landscapers and mechanics. My grandmothers, who were homemakers in a sense, they farmed, right? They kept the farm. They did the chickens and the eggs and the watermelons and peas and made stuff so to the community. But they were all poor. And so that didn't really go together. Like, it can't be work ethic. Some people worked hard. My mom had a stroke on her job and died 3 days later because she worked so hard. You know what I'm saying? My dad retired after 32 years working for the U.S. government and then had to go back to work part-time to supplement his retirement, right?
Right.
Don't tell me work ethic. Don't tell me that. It's financial intelligence. Now, for most of us in our community, we're told things like your father told you, save your money. And to a sense, that is true, but that is so far down the line of trying to save nickels and dimes, and a lot of people don't even have money to save. Right, we say it's a lifestyle. It's not even that, man. It's the we do not all have opportunity or equal access to best resources, and that divider, that gap, is financial intelligence. And
right.
So, getting the knowledge of the money world, how money works, right? That's financial intelligence. It does start with saving and budgeting. I mean, that's a part of it. It doesn't start with that. It does include that. It does include credit. And that's some of the things we are seeing, more consciousness in our community.
Right.
But if we're going to see ourselves move ourselves into wealth creation and wealth preservation, we've really got to start moving into financial intelligence. It must be a mandate that we teach in our homes, in our churches, and in our schools.
All right. I agree. It definitely helped change my life, learning and implementing the things, all of the lessons from financial intelligence. And there's still a lot that I need to learn, but what I have learned and implemented, definitely a big difference.
And the fact that, you know, we say that we still have so much to learn, And man, because there is so much to learn.
Yeah.
But what we have, you're doing it now, man. The conversations that we've had since you're relatively new to trading in the financial world.
Mm-hmm.
Be willing to take what you do know and give it back to the community. Says so much, man. That you are a hero. That makes you a hero to your community, man. Because we can't wait until we feel like we've attained it all, then try to bring it back to the community, right?
Right. Right.
Get what we got. Bring it back. That's what activism is. That's building the undergrounds, right? Hey, yeah. I found the path. I don't know all of it right now, but let me get a few people and let's all go beat this path out together, and then come back and get some more people, and then we'll go a little further, and then we'll come back and we'll get some more. So kudos to y'all.
I appreciate that. Definitely appreciate that, and because I know you and Patrick are actually the two people that I've talked to the most about. Stocks, about trading, about investing. So thank you to both of you. But yeah, I know my intention or my goal is to take it, use it, but also teach others about it, because I'm just sick and tired of going to my communities and seeing people struggling. And we all know what it's like to struggle. And I don't like to see people struggle. So I just want to try to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. You're doing it. Y'all doing it, man.
Thank you.
So explain to people, if you would, please, sir, what is a financial markets instructor? Well, I guess we can start. What is a financial market? Because I don't even think people really have a firm grasp of what that is.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Man, listen, like you've been on the journey with me around this country, and it's just I've traveled this country from Hawaii to island of Hawaii down to San Juan, Puerto Rico. I've taught classes, man, and when I see people of color, especially people of color, have no clue what the financial markets are. And I always say this, and I'll share it with your guests: the financial markets have everything to do with our lives. From the homes we live in, the cars we drive, the food we eat, the clothes we wear, the schools we send our children to, the markets, the financial markets, are dictating that. So the least you could do, the least anyone can do, is get some education on it. If it's impacting our lives that much, right? The financial markets determine who wins elections. Financial markets determine so many factors in our lives. So here in the States, you have stocks, also known as equities, right? So a company, when it goes public, it gives an opportunity for the public to make investments into their company, right? And you buy that, you become a shareholder. You also have what are called commodities. Good movie to watch, man. I love it. I always teach it to my students. Go watch. Do you two remember? You guys are a little younger than I am, I think. Do you all remember the movie Trading Places?
Yeah. Yeah.
Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
A wonderful depiction of the market. Hollywood did a wonderful job, as they often do with scenarios. But that movie was centered around commodities. So there's two commodities in that particular movie they talked about, or Eddie Murphy talked about: pork bellies and frozen concentrated orange juice. But commodities, that's what that is. It's gold, silver, wheat, soybeans, sugar, commodities, livestock, commodities, okay? There are some financial products and their currencies in the futures market, but primarily it's those tangibles. You have the actual currency market, all right? If you and I determined we were going to go for Labor Day to Canada tomorrow and go shopping, well, we couldn't spend USD over there. We'd have to convert the USD over to the CAD, Canadian dollar, at an exchange rate.
Right.
The Forex market, the currencies market, allowed us to trade currency pairs against each other at that exchange rate. You have also, I know very little about it. I'm not into it, but the organization that I teach for, we do have educational courses for it, cryptocurrencies, which is a digital currency. It ain't a hoax. It ain't a scam. It's where the world is going. That's all I'll say about that. It's real currency. You go. I lived on the West Coast for a little while, for about a year and a half. And almost any convenience store you go in on the West Coast, at least where I live in Southern California, you go in any, instead of seeing ATMs or right next to ATMs, you'll see cryptocurrency ATMs.
Mm-hmm.
It's real currency. It has arrived. It's not going anywhere. You also have another option, class called options. And
mm-hmm.
options actually, you don't own stocks. You trade a derivative of a stock. And you get a payout on trading that. It's almost like having insurance on a stock. So you have stock, options, commodities, currencies, cryptocurrencies, and of course you can also add into that world real estate, because real estate is a big part of the financial market as well.
Right. Okay. Okay. And so, all right. And so, basically, as a financial markets instructor, you're breaking down, just like you did with us, you're breaking down to the different classes and clients that you have, explain to them what the markets are and explain to them how to navigate the markets.
Yeah. How they work, who moves them, banks and institutions move them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the gap for us, again, in financial education and intelligence is we've got to start performing like banks and institutions do. They know how to leverage debt. They know how to use OPM, other people's money, right? And their gains and rewards are substantially different than ours. Even in market turns and market crashes, they actually become more rich when the market starts to go into downtrends and cycles and move into, after so many down days, what's called a recession. So it's really identifying what the banks and institutions are doing, or those who have institutional wealth, like Mr. Warren Buffett, and do what they do.
Okay. That's what's up. Now you know, Patrick. Now you know what a financial market is. I told you. Anyone listen to me, though, Patrick?
Yep, you sure did. I think that was just, 5 minutes from now, you told me. Sure did.
Hey, you know. But see, the fact, no matter how long ago it was, just know it happened.
Yep, it's going to happen in 4 minutes. You're 100%.
Mm-hmm. Whatever, man. So, faith, as you also stated early in the interview, your faith is an important part of your life. We, all of us on this line, grew up in the church. I know from my experience going to church, going to Sunday school, or anything attached to church. Or any fact, well, for me, specific church, money was not what we talked about. Finances is not what we talked about.
Yes,
right, right. Also, you know, it was the people kept using the saying that, money is the root of all evil, and it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get into heaven. So, with that being put in your mind, it's like, well, having money is a bad thing, but the Pope got all his money, but having money is a bad thing. But so it's kind of conflicting, and we're not talking about it. So I know that's for me, but for you specifically, especially having your experience in the ministry, why didn't you decide to keep the messages separate? Why did you decide to incorporate a message of finance within your faith and within the messages that you're given through your faith?
Sure. Good answer to that is because that wasn't my decision to make. There is no separation in the sacred text. From the creation of the world, when God created the heaven and the earth, and particularly the earth, you read the Genesis narrative given to us by Moses through Revelation, he had several streams running in through the Garden of Eden. One of them actually was running with gold in it. And what do we tell people? That you should have, to create financial wealth, you should have 5 to 7 different streams of income coming
mm-hmm.
in. So you look at that. You look at every record in the narrative of prominent, influential men. Abraham, father of the nation of Israel, was handsomely wealthy. Moses was very wealthy. Solomon Very wealthy. David wealthy. Daniel wealthy. Jesus wealthy. Jesus, as a matter of fact, breaks this whole paradigm when he's going to build this thing called the church in the Gospel of Matthew 16. He didn't even pick one synagogue ruler. He didn't pick one priest. He chose 12 businessmen to build the embassy that we know as the church. 12 businessmen who were well-to-do, so well-to-do that they were able to leave their business to commit to this adventure and this endeavor. They were able to underwrite it, so much so. When the New Testament church was birthed in Acts, those apostles acted as CEOs, so much so that the people in the community brought all their offerings or their substance to the apostles' feet. And the apostles had a distribution program whereby no one in their community would lack. Acts chapter number 2, everyone had all things equal and in common. So it wasn't a decision not to separate it. It was already laid there in Scripture. But back to what you said, and I'm a third generation minister. My father is an active pastor. He's going to retire this year after 43 years of active preaching and pastoring. His father was a pastor until he passed away. My maternal grandfather was an associate pastor. My grandmother was a missionary. My mother was a preaching woman until she passed away. But can I say to them, I love them all deeply because they said those same things, that money is a root of money, is the root of all evil. And I have come to know that money is neutral. Money can't be good or evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's who has access to it and what they do with it that makes it evil. But, you know, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, what James says. But also, the lack of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So ain't nobody dealing with that narrative about the lack of money and how it causes families to break up, how it causes people to thieve and rob and to do things they ought not do to try to have money. So we got to have a balance in the message. But, you know, to really answer that question, that wasn't my call. I just walked in a revelation that faith and finance was just as finance was just as important as faith and family and fitness. So, that wasn't my decision. It was just I came into a new revelation, man.
That's what's up. That's cool. I appreciate you doing that. I mean, it's helping so many people, and it's changing over. Well, it's starting a new narrative or continuing a narrative that has been started but hasn't been pushed the way it's supposed to be. So definitely thank you for that, because people are definitely benefiting from that information.
No, I real quick, man, in 2008 was just coming out of, and I share this with transparency, coming out of a divorce, just had lost my job with the market crash. I worked for a business that just, the handwriting was on the wall, but I had no business acumen. I knew where things were going. Our sales were decreasing. I was a territory sales rep. I was on the road Monday through Friday, came back home on Saturday to preach at my church on Sunday. But when that business closed down, nobody was hiring in my field of work. Uh-huh. A friend of mine told me to hire yourself, and I didn't know what that meant, you know. And I was at this time, I lost my car. Car was repossessed from the church, one of the most humiliating things that could ever happen to you. I lost my home. I thought I was living out of my church office. I was praying one day, and I started asking God to give me access to money. He said, you're praying the wrong way. You need to ask me for access to the money world. And it was just, it meant taking an unorthodox course in life that frustrated a lot of people very close to me because, you know, what we're told to do, man. Robert Kiyosaki says, and Rich Dad Poor Dad, go to school, graduate, get a good job, work for 30 years, save your money, put something away for retirement, and everything's going to be okay. And that paradigm continues to show over and over and over again, it does not work. 75% of U.S. citizens live paycheck to paycheck. So that means most people won't be in a position to retire. That same 75% aren't ready for retirement. So they're going to have to either continue to work or decrease their lifestyle so significant just to continue to keep a roof over their head, food in their cabinet. But many of them, when they die, will leave nothing to their following generation.
Right. That's true. Definitely true.
And I was kind of eulogizing people and going to funerals of hearing that, of how great the deceased was, right?
Right.
He's got a mansion in God's kingdom. How are we trying to make that moral, man, that you left your people behind here to struggle, right?
Right. But you
got a mansion in the kingdom. That's like saying if I left my children and to go live in Singapore in a castle, in a chateau, because I'm living in another world. It's like that don't make sense, man. But that was the kind of stuff that didn't make sense to me when I hear it eulogized across the pulpit. Like, okay, we can't keep dying broke and then saying we got a reward in heaven because we was faithful down here, man. It's not a good testament of the faith. Even it's not a good witness of the faith.
Right.
No, it's not. Yeah. No. It's kind of hard to get people to buy in when everybody else is getting it here and I got to wait later.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, heaven was kind of that, man. Heaven had become this place where we escape from the cares of this world because we didn't learn how to master this world. And the simple and mandate given to us by God, Jehovah, was, hey, I want you to dominate down here. Mm. And so, you know, it's the how this message got construed, it ain't my mama's fault, my grandfather's fault, or the narratives of these people, man. It's just we have regurgitated what was given to us. And until you come into Revelation, I just came into this revelation, man, and I'm theologically trained, but I didn't come to this through theology, man. I came to these revelations through experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's needed, though. It's time for a change. It's time. I enjoy it when I see, especially these younger black people on social media who are making money, changing their family's trajectory, and teaching others how to do it. You see so many people. So I do feel good about those who take advantage of the information. Our future going to be so much different. It's going to be so much better just by taking advantage and utilizing the information that's available. So,
yeah. Yep. I can dig it. No, because I'm liking like what's being said, so I'm like in listen mode right now. Like, and I got to keep remembering this is supposed to be a conversation.
Right.
So, for those, you know, forgive me for not being as silly as usual, but every now and then we have a guest that put me in listen mode, and so that's what I'm in right now. So, but I do have a question, though.
Sure.
Is it okay if I ask a question, Joseph?
I mean, this is an interview.
Nah, could you be acting funny? Like, I didn't already told people the stories of how you be before the show start.
Hey, ain't doing but helping my brand. Go ahead. Do your thing.
I like it.
So, as somebody walking in the space that you're walking in with, you know, this message that for many people would seem counterintuitive or counter to the message that they typically would get from the church.
Mm-hmm.
Have you faced any sort of backlash for the information you're given and with the church or with people from the church or with people that are currently heavily, I guess, indoctrinated? I don't want to use a negative word into, you know, old school religious dogma. Have you had any backlash or anything like that from, you know, the teachings that you're giving?
You know, first of all, for the past, none of that was negative. That's absolutely true description. You used all the right narratives. Yeah, man, deep rooted from coming from a place of classical Pentecostalism, where it, you know, I'm talking church back in the day when we went to church 3 to 4 times a week, and not including the business meetings and the choir rehearsals and the usher rehearsals and all that stuff, man. being on our knees, calling out to the Lord, you know, and just told to draw within the line. Yeah. So when I made this leap, many doors, because by this time I've been traveling and preaching, at least up and down the East Coast. The other parts of this nation hadn't really opened up to me. But there were just places I was going annually to do their revivals, to preach anniversaries or, you know, conferences or whatever, man. So when I began to share with these pastors who were male and female that would host me that God had given me a mandate. It wasn't a new message. It was a mandate. The message has always been the same. That more marketplace ministry. I wasn't really calling it just finance. It was marketplace ministry. And how we can govern, dominate, and in the public square. And it's just really our community, man. Lots of backlash. Lots of doors were closed. Slammed in my face. You know, but I would say what I've learned to do very quick in a hurry was get thick skin and turn the volume down on that, because I actually saw myself retreating, going back to just, okay, this is what they want to hear. And I remember the Lord reminding me of the obligation of the message through my experience, through the experience. It was a backlash of that I was a money preacher. It was a backlash I had one pastor tell me this recently, who I respect, and I'm just sharing it out of respect. We're mutual. We're good friends. I was sharing to him I wanted to come to his church and share. And he said this in a third-party story. He said, I've got a brother who's been coming around and he wanted to share something about financial wellness and things like that. And, you know, this brother drives a Toyota. And I told him, when you become a millionaire, then you come back and you teach me how to become a millionaire.
Wow.
So I said, Pastor, are there any struggles in your life? And I knew the answer to this because I was a sounding board for him on his personal struggle. And he said, yeah. I said, yet you get to every Sunday mount your pulpit and preach to people about holiness and righteousness, and there's things you're struggling with in your personal life. I said, here's the problem with us, especially in the African-American context, is that we feel like that. You can't come tell me about fixing my money till you get all your money straight. Any new knowledge that I have is a benefit to us all. And we always say that. Well, I ain't where I'm supposed to be, but thank God I ain't where I used to be. But America's the same for me in finance. I'm a guy asking me recently. He said, I bet you're a multimillionaire. I said, I claim that in the name of Jesus. I'm not close to that. I said, but I am so much closer than I was 10 years ago. Right? So what I have learned, what I have been to attribute to my own life, right, has changed my financial trajectory considerably. So just those kind of things, man, that, you know, and I started putting plugs in my promos. I ain't trying to get nothing from you. I'm trying to get something to you. And I had to stop trying to justify my message or the message that the Lord had given me. So I just, whoever will, man, whoever will allow me to share it, allow me to share it, man. But, one thing for sure, the Lord has given me a platform in the marketplace, and I am able to use scriptural reference in a place that's not really faith-based on. But money people, man, usually who's sitting in the room aren't really people who are struggling. Are doing well and want to know, how do I get to the next dimension, the next level of wealth?
Right.
And we'll learn from me, shake my hand, and give me their telephone number, invite me to dinner, and we can talk and we text. And still, I've taught multimillionaires how to become multimillionaires.
Right.
Right. While I'm learning how to become. You understand what I'm saying? It's because in their mind, they don't see no difference. They don't look at me. They're not looking at my shoes, my watch, or what I drove up in. They're saying, he's got something, and again, I said it, we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
So when you get in that place, you make yourself humble, right? And you're not ready to throw stones at someone because you're trying to evaluate who they are and where they are. So the backlash in the church has been there, man. It is true. I'm not trying to get anything from anyone. I am trying to get something to everyone, but, you know, you have to deal with, and that's what I said, when we start talking about financial intelligence, we don't even need to start talking about credit or income. The first lesson is mindset.
Right. Now, that's...
Go ahead.
I was just saying, it's interesting that your wealth would be, and it's, it's not interesting, but it is interesting that your wealth will be measured by what you drive. And because a lot of the things that I'm learning now is you want to be, especially as an investor or somebody, you want to be able to put as much as your money as possible in the market so it can work for you. So, like, I'm thinking about getting a Toyota Prius because somebody was telling me $17 a month for gas that will have, she do hers. I don't know how much she drive, but just, no, how can I cut back on expenses? Like, that's the mindset of somebody building wealth to be comfortable.
Yes. Brother, when I teach these classes, these wealthy people are very unassuming. You wouldn't know. I mean that. Literally, and I've been in parts of the country where they come in overall, and after the class, they come to me and said, hey, I've got $50 million. I need to know what to do with. You just
right.
Know me.
Right.
No Prada, no Versace, no Gucci, no Mambo, no Rolls. No chain, and if you like that stuff, you like that stuff. But I'm saying those are not the measurements. You said it. Those are not the measurements of wealth, man. If that is not.
Right.
That's how we have been taught to size each other up like that.
Right. Now, that's. Go ahead.
Because Joe and I have had this conversation, and when you. What you just said was like something that, you know, I've probably been struggling with for years, and I've talked to Joe, and it's interesting that you speak on it because that's always been like one of the reasons why I stopped, you know, giving advice. Back when I had money rolling in and I was doing well in investments and things like that, I felt more comfortable giving advice because people could see it if they needed to. Now, even though I know more than I knew back then, a lot more, I'm nowhere near as comfortable, so I don't say anything to anybody about nothing to do with finances because I'm like, yo, my stuff ain't where it need to be. So to hear you speak on it on that level, you know, I can say that was kind of therapeutic for me. I was like, I never thought about it like that. That's interesting. That's real interesting.
Well, again, so that's why the message is, and this ain't a revelation for me. I have a business and I have a money mentor, right? And mm-hmm. The first thing they all have taught me is you gotta have a mindset shift, right? Your income can't change. You won't embrace tax strategy. It's going to push against all the stuff that you told was right. Right? All the things that you use to measure success, you got to take all of that and throw it out the window. Because none of it is any good. We have just been misinformed and miseducated, and it's sad that we have made righteous something that is very unrighteous. The book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, changed my life, man. And so his message has been consistently the same, but he says it in the book. He was teaching the message when he was struggling as an entrepreneur, failing. One of his businesses was a wallet company, and he had failed. But he still was teaching through his trial and error process. And no one was measuring him by what he had or didn't have. It was what was in his head, man, that was so valuable, the lessons that he was learning, that the risk, I've already taken the risk for you. I know what works and what doesn't work
right.
About this. And as he was learning more through his mentor, he was increasing his knowledge base and his message base and was able to come back and teach even more. But man, it's crazy, though. We'll go to school and sit in a business class for somebody who's never owned a business before.
That's true.
That is true. I've thought about that. That's very true.
Yeah.
He may be a tenured professor and still have never, ever, ever taken out an LLC, INC, a business bank account.
Yeah.
And I'm not discrediting them. They study to teach the information. But no one's sizing them up. How was your bottom line? You in the red or you in the black? Have you moved to a franchise model? Are you contracting? Are you expanding? What's going on with your business? No one's like that. It's just So
yeah. Now, that's true.
I think about that. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
No, go ahead. Say your thing. Say your thing, start.
No, I was just going to say, I think about that literally every time I take a course. Like, even when I was signing up to take my my Lean Six Sigma courses, it was kind of like, you know, I don't know if the person I'm learning from actually knows what he's doing. The first course. Now, what I signed up for the second one, and it was with the same guy, so it was like, okay, I know he knows what he's doing. But the first go around, it was like, yeah, I'm finna get this dude a whole bunch of money to teach me something, and I ain't sized him up about real world application for this stuff that he's teaching me yet. So that's something I do think about a lot. But the mindset to be able to flip it around and say, well, if he studied well enough to teach me how to do it, then it doesn't matter. The same mindset you would give to a college professor or something, you know, being able to flip that around and apply it to yourself. Well, I've gone through the lessons. I've studied. I've failed a lot. I know what I know. So why can't I teach these lessons? I think that is a revelation that a lot of people just struggle with. But that goes back to the mindset piece that you've been consistently talking about.
Yeah. Well, it's paramount. It's the first part to becoming an investor. It's the first part to becoming wealthy. It really is. We can't talk about income strategy, investment strategy. We can't talk about any of those things until we first fix our mindset. Just because wealthy people think and behave absolutely different. Actually, as a matter of fact, the firm that I worked for several years that teaches the financial markets, to the degree of not just beyond theory, but making it practical, how to trade and invest in the stock options market. Man, the first few classes, actually for the first month, they're telling you, we're not trading. We're not opening up another brokerage account. We got to deal with your mindset. Because the way we make decisions is based on the information that has been afforded to us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so while I was wanting to come back to the church, because I also felt like the church was a place that would be most open to upgraded revelation, upgraded information, and y'all used the word correctly, there was a backlash. There was this, get away from us. And I would kick back sometimes and say, listen, we keep telling people, and I believe in tithing offering. I believe in it, okay? It's a formula that works. But we kept telling people that if you just do that, everything's going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not even in Scripture.
Right.
That's misrepresentation of that particular theological mysterion, because I do believe in tithing offering. And not because I like the guy or dislike him, but Donald Trump said this in his book that he co-wrote with Robert Kiyosaki, Why We Want You to Be Rich. I think it's chapter 6 or 7. They talked about tithing. Wealthy people do it because it's a principle that they believe on, but it's not the only thing they do. So he has told people that. Give your tithing your offering, God will make sure all your bills are paid, and I tithe faithfully and still live paycheck to paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so then they would tell you, you're tithing wrong. Like, how do you tithe wrong? Right? You have to check your attitude. You took one piece and you tried to make it the whole gamut of what it takes to be financially prosperous. And the scriptures never taught that. Ever, 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 ever. But the pastor who didn't know anything about business or economics or finance, financial markets, you know, that's how he covered up his ignorance or her ignorance by saying, hey, you just tithe, you give your offering. Everything gonna be
over. Right. That's wow. Okay. So in taking everything you just said, you did mention investing, and that is a means of building wealth. And there are many different ways to invest. So for those who don't know, or those who may have a slight idea of investing, is can you kind of break down what investing is and how beneficial, consistent, smart investing can be?
Yeah. If I were to give it the Eric Thomas, not the hip-hop preacher that Pat talked about, Eric Thomas, I call myself the marketplace minister. Eric Thomas, the marketplace minister. My definition for investing is very simple. It's learning how to employ money, how to get money to work for you. I made alluded to earlier what we teach is kind of learn what banks and institutions are doing.
Right.
The fundamental part to trading, because most people say, man, I've got no money to trade and invest. And I said, neither do banks, neither do these institutions. All right? Bank of America doesn't have any money. Bank of America only has the money of the people that put their money in their account. So if you take $100,000 to Bank of America tomorrow, not tomorrow because it's Labor Day, but on Tuesday, you take $100,000 to Bank of America, do you think they're going to take that $100,000, put it in a lockbox, and bring you the key? Joe, no. Matt, is that what they're going to do?
Nope.
What are they going to do with that money?
They're going to reinvest that money, or they're going to give that money somewhere else to try to make some money off that money.
Called OPM. Now, the first basic to this is learn how to use other people's money. That's the law of investment right there, man. So what does insurance, all right, so let's say you have Nationwide car insurance. Let's say for the entire year of 2019, you were a safe driver. So in the beginning of 2020, Nationwide wrote you a refund check for your premium, yes or no? No, they didn't give you your money back. They didn't say, hey, you were a safe driver. We're going to give you all your money. What did they do with that monthly premium that you paid?
It probably boosted it up.
Nationwide, all of the insurance companies, all of them, you name them, they are all invested in the financial market. Using what? OPM.
Okay.
And if we would learn that, just the power of other people's money. But you first have to learn how to employ money. Take money and get it working for you. Okay? That's the first part of it. But in the rank, the investing wouldn't be first. You can't invest first. First thing you have to do is you have to work on your income problem. Right? You need to increase your income. And that doesn't mean that they're getting another job. I would say this. You should do whatever your purpose is in life. But learn the industry. I teach this to business. Now, I teach this to executives, entrepreneurs, entertainers, all the time. Learn the industry. Become an artist in it. Become your own brand. That's your branding, your expression, right? The mastery is learning how to be a guru in that. And then be a service. Then be a service, man. Industry, learn the industry, whatever it is. Right? If it's sports, entertainment, whatever it is. Business, economics, media, communication, science, technology, faith, preaching, whatever it is. Learn everything you can learn about that industry. Learn your own unique expression in that. That's called your artistry. That's your brand. Make your brand bankable by becoming a master of it. Right? The only difference between my money mentor, he recently had an event. His ticket he had to condense his entry for people to come down to 20. But his entry to come to his event, his three-day business event, was $30,000 a ticket.
Wow.
Now, he and I teach the same content, relatively. Right? But his brand is so much bankable than mine. I'm not at the place where I can charge $30,000 to come spend time with you. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And so that's what we got to do first. We got to do that. We got to learn how to quantify our income exponentially. Okay, then we're still not ready to invest. The next thing we got to do, all talk to me about my, and everybody needs to have a money mentor and a business mentor. Second thing we need to do is learn how to take advantage of tax strategy. That's the second thing we have to do, man. If you are a W-2, you're a regular employee, average American makes $60,000 a year. A third of that is coming out in taxes. First, the reason our commander-in-chief don't want to submit his tax statement is because I'm telling you, I noticed he didn't pay any.
Mm-hmm.
Because the wealthy know how not to pay taxes. So we got to learn tax strategies, right? Then we got to work on our spending. We got to work on budgeting and things like that. We got to work, and that's really just your behavior, right? That's just putting money where it needs to be, allocating money where it needs to be allocated. And then we're ready for investing. Right, and there's just so many ways to invest, man. You've got stocks, you've got options, you got, like I said, commodities, you got real estate. There's so many ways to be invested, and all of those require different strategies. It all depends on what you're trying to accomplish. There's no one size fits all investment strategy. Works well for Brother Joe may not work well for Brother Pat. What works for Brother Pat may not work for Eric. So it's really determine what it is you're trying to do. Try to supplement income, replace income. Are you trying to fund your retirement? Are you trying to supplement your retirement? A lot goes into this whole idea of investing. But if you come into investing with an employee mindset or your old dogma and mentality, when people tell me it doesn't work, my mentor also taught me, agree. And I would say, you're right, it doesn't work. You're absolutely right. It doesn't work. It don't work if we don't work it.
Right.
If you come in with that mentality, absolutely. You are 100% correct. It doesn't work. That piece, I don't know. That's the one thing we have to take ownership for is our mentalities, right? And you have to identify, I call this in Influence Me Institute, our BS, our belief systems. And our belief systems typically are just things that have been passed down to us. And they typically cause another set of BS called blind spots. And you need someone to come show you your blind spots. Right? I used to believe money was the root of all evil. I preached that stuff in pulpit. I condemned people for wanting to be wealthy and rich. I said that same thing. The rich people ain't going to heaven. It's harder for a rich man to enter to the eye of a needle than it is. It's easier for a camel to enter into the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter to heaven.
Right.
It wasn't a myth what Jesus was talking about. I don't have time to break that scripture apart, but it was
right. A
misinterpretation of a scripture.
Right.
We made poor fashionable.
Yeah, too much.
We had no other message.
Yeah. I appreciate that breakdown that you did of it because that mindset is important. And as you were saying that, I'm sitting there thinking because I've been consuming financial information, reading the books to really get my mindset together. But as you were talking, I was thinking it is a process because now I think I'm in a better place, a more mature place to where I'm going to really do every necessary thing to make sure my wealth is built rather than a couple years ago, even though I was reading. I read the books. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad 3 or 4 times. Some of the other books, I have my own personal library. I think most of it is, well, not most of it, but a good portion is books to change my mindset, to get my mind to a place to where I can build wealth or build business or just be the best at anything. But as you're saying, I'm like, okay, it is a process because now, and you know, you and I have had conversations about investing. It's so fun to me. Because I call it my new sport. Even though I know it's a lot deeper, but I call it my new sport because talking to you, talking to Pat, and, you know, I've been telling both of you that I've been using the investing simulators. I've used one on Investopedia, but I've changed to TD Ameritrade. Investopedia, it was good. I was learning some things, but it worked kind of slow, and I think that kind of affected some of the trades I've been making. But since I moved over to TD Ameritrade, like this past week, I won 3 trades, lost 1, and broke even on 1. So pretty good week, and it's just – been putting the information.
Clapping over here, man. Wait a minute. You got to stop and celebrate that kind of stuff, man.
Yes, sir. And I've definitely been keeping my investing journal. But not only that, but looking at my investments and feeling good about that, because I have more money now since I've been investing than I ever tried to have just straight saving. And that, so for both of you, you Brother Thomas and Pat, I appreciate both of you, because you were the two people who took the most time to sit down with me and give me some of this information. And I tell anybody, do it. Like, take care of your finances. Do it. Learn to invest your money. Like you said, learn to employ your money. It's going to make a lot of different changes in your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Probably.
Wake up, man. Yes, I appreciate it.
I'm not asleep. I'm listening. You was talking. You was talking. Y'all was talking. I wasn't supposed to just talk over y'all.
No, nope, just be ready.
No, this ain't double dutch. When you drop knowledge, if people dropping gems, I'm gonna be behind because I got the bag picking them up.
Hey,
there you go.
Shoot, y'all out here playing. Hope y'all taking notes in the audience, because this podcast can't be rewinded. Yes, it can, and rewinded ain't a word, but
it is now.
So, what is it? Is it rewound? Rewound?
Who knows? You just, hey, we gonna, it's in our lexicon, we're using it.
Nah, Joe. You gotta change your mindset, man.
Oh, okay. I see what you did.
Yeah. Yeah, 2 points for me. So, you talked about commodities, and you talked about the various different types of markets. And even Joe has mentioned, you know, he won three, broke even, and lost one. And all of this other stuff, sports, and all of this other stuff. But, you know, and even with the mindset piece, you know, that's been talked about. All of that information is very valuable, but I know most people, you know, they think they know, but they probably don't know. But what's investing? Like, just, like, break that down, like, very simply. Like, what does it mean to say that you're investing?
Yeah, it really is. It's the definition I gave. It's employing money, right? It's with understanding that at the end of when money is working, money is going to generate more money. So, again, it's really the difference of self-employment. We go to work, we will work, and we know that if you go to work tomorrow, you're not going to get paid tomorrow. Whatever that payout cycle is, that's what it's going to be. But you would have exerted so much time and energy into a certain industry and craft, and it's going to pay you at a certain – there's a certain payout time. I say this all the time, is that you trade for income, you invest for wealth. When you're trading in the markets, you're holding that trade for a very short amount of time. You're looking at, you know, whether people do it the day trade or some people do it the swing trade, right, to get weekly or monthly income or payback. It's just that, man. When you invest in real estate, you're releasing money into that particular entity because you understand it, and whatever you put in, you know that there's going to be an increase with the knowledge. With knowledge, if you're doing it correctly, you're going to have losses. As Brother Joe said, that's why I said let's celebrate that. You're going to break even. That's what happens in investing. You have five things, five results. You have big wins, small wins, you break even, small losses, and big losses. And if you know what investing really is about, understanding in every asset class, real estate, stock, commodities, all of it, is proper risk management. Proper risk management says I can deal with the first four, big wins, small wins, breaking even, small losses, right? Only thing I need to keep out of that scenario are the big losses, and that's just understanding proper risk management. And you learn that by looking at what the banks and institutions are doing. They know how to manage risk. But again, it goes back to a mindset because it's going to cause you to do things that you normally wouldn't do. Like one of the things we hear to do when the market goes down, get everything out. Come on, man. In 2008, J.P. Morgan, all the big boys, quantified their returns because they put more money into the markets when the markets went down in 2000. Mm-hmm. They reported days of some $5 to $20 million a day profits. When people were foreclosing on their homes, industries or businesses were shutting down, some were being shipped over to China, all kinds of scenarios in 2008. But the big boys put more money in, right? Because they know how to manage their risk. And again, proper risk management, that is a really good mindset. Most people won't take the risk others are willing to take. And you shouldn't. If your mentality is not there, you shouldn't. If you're gun shy, if you whatever, if you're timid, if you're passive, lethargic, apathetic, any of those things, you're not going to manage the risk. Too much emotion involved.
Cool. Yep. A downturn means turn up. Oh, one thing I did like that you said, and you just repeated it, though, is about making other people's money work for you. It's one of those things that transitions or translates well across sectors, markets, services, whatever. Like, even in terms of, like, being an entrepreneur, starting your own business, you know, the goal there is to get to a point to where you can leverage other people's time to make you money doing labor that you don't necessarily want to do, especially when you don't want to do it. So, like, that whole concept of being able to utilize other people's resources in order to acquire wealth, I haven't really heard very many people speak on it from a financial market standpoint, but it is something that people speak on from a business standpoint often enough. So I just wanted to, like, I appreciated you for making that statement and making that connection there, because that's a connection when it comes to stock markets and investing and trading and stuff that
in business ventures.
And I don't hear it.
Yeah, in business ventures, you guys are historians, man, because I'm preaching to the choir. I'm just talking to your listeners, because I know you guys know this stuff already. We're talking about an ancient, I wouldn't call it a secret. It's just been a strategy, right? It's in scripture. There was this one lady who came to a prophet and said, hey, my husband died, owing debtors. They're going to come take my son to collect the debt. And the prophet said, what do you have in your house? And she said, I got some oil, and I'm going to take this, and I'm going to eat it. And he said, go to your neighbors and go borrow vessels. Man, that's crowdfunding right there. And he's like, come on, man, crowdfunding ain't no new idea. It's just stuff that's always been in the world. We just never implemented it. If you and I opened up, you know, a fund right now and started saying, hey, we want you to give, you give me $25 or $2,500 or $25,000, and we're gonna invest your money, you know, the way we've been taught, man, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, is, oh my God, I ain't giving you my money. Man, it's what IPOs are. It's when a company goes public. They start calling people the big money. Are you ready to invest? Give up your money, put your money to work, and start underwriting. This business is ready to scale exponentially. So OPM is just, it's the law of investing, man. I hear people say, I don't have money to invest. I said, that's okay. Learn to use leverage. Learn, and then each one of these accounts, each one of these asset classes have leverage. I see more and more African-Americans going into the Forex market because it has the greatest leverage. You can get in with a little bit of money and put the leverage to work for you. That's OPM.
Yeah, yeah. Those Forex people be after you. I don't know. The word got out, I'm investing in every new Instagram request. It's some Forex person. And I have learned a bit about Forex, foreign exchange, but I'm more into the stock market than Forex as of right now. But I do know what the team. Oh, go ahead.
Stock market has made more people wealthy than any other asset class. Stocks and options.
Right.
Then third would be commodities. Hands down, I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. I'm not dissing the Forex market, but mm-hmm. I'm telling you what I know. I'm in that world, right?
Right.
All them guys in Texas and those big ones, all I'm going to tell you, it's first stock, then it's options, then it's commodities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For Forex, it just allows people with a little bit of cash to get into the financial market, right?
Yeah.
And I'm appreciative of that low barrier of entry. But I think, man, for what you are to explain to me, what you're trying to accomplish, you're in the right place, in the right place.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I want to get into your business, the Influence Me Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that name. I do like that name. Why was the Influence Me Institute founded? And as the CEO, why should people seek your services?
Yeah, man. The gap between here and there is learning. When we launched this business, I launched it as a solopreneur, brought on partners. Later on, we were known as the Impact Group.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a real gathering of the minds, come to Jesus moment at the end of the year that we had already been playing around with the word. We had an annual event called Influence Me Business Conference. And so we started looking at this word influence, and then we started talking about being an institute, right? And we wanted to become this place that was known for not only educating, but a place that would empower and activate people to use what they were learning. So we start structuring ourselves to be more of that. So, you know, institute was the word we chose over academy or anything like that. But it isn't just learning. It isn't just education. It isn't just coaching and consulting. Like, we have designed our business model to activate people to use what they learn. A great friend of mine, he's an associate, Marcus Rozier, said this to me, I don't know if you know Marcus or not, but Marcus is from the Panhandle area, Tallahassee, doing great things, man. Marcus Y. Rozier said that said this to me, changed my life, and we were talking about my business. He said, Eric, people are addicted to information but allergic to action.
Yeah, yeah.
That doggone Marcus Rose can drop some stuff, man. I said, That's cool, man. He said again, people are addicted to information and allergic to action. So we wanted to start working on that to see how we could start moving people into real action, actionable steps of implementing what they learn from us. That if we're in a room, whether we're keynoting or whether we're coming in to do a series of workshops and seminars, we want to start enforcing sometimes the way of accountability to see people moving into measurable improvement into their life, and that will eventually become advancement. So that's what the Institute is really, really all about.
I appreciate that. Definitely appreciate that.
Now, who should seek us out is whosoever will, man. I really, really mean that. I have a heart for people. One of our things we're trademarking this, and I guess we're putting it out here before we trademark it, is our phrase of economic dignity. So we really do have a heart for people who suffer with the inopportunities that are there, that they may be experiencing, poverty they may be experiencing. But it has to be. It has to be what person is looking for community opportunities. If you're trying to do this for yourself, I promise you, at least for us, and the other people I know out there, John Hope Bryant has some educational things out there. Rodney Hot, Luke, just good brothers, man. They have Jay Morrison have institutions, but all of them are saying the same thing. It's got to be a community. You got to be wanting to go back and take this back to your village. You got to want to take this back to your family. If this is just to get the Rolls Royce or the whatever the bling bling, like, they ain't gonna work, man. That's the stuff you see on TV, and that's all scripted. Ain't none of that reality. That's scripted stuff, man.
Right, right. That's real. I appreciate that. Key research. data metrics. Terms people don't really hear much. Can you kind of break down what key research and data metrics is and how or why it's important, why those two things are important as far as being successful and building wealth?
Yeah. Every successful business and entrepreneur will tell you this. You've heard it. The numbers don't lie. And you got to know your numbers.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Everything that we do is research-based, that's therefore evidence-based. We don't ever do anything on theory, right? The theory isn't always practical. But for any of the information that we share to become practical, we have to look at metrics. We have to look at the things. We have to measure everything, because everything can be measured, tangible and intangible. Just like the cranium of your head can be measured, your thought process can be measured, your behavior can be measured. And that's going to determine, those kind of things will determine what kind of output you have in your life, what kind of income is coming into your life. You know those things. All those things can be, one thing is connected to the other. So I am grateful for Angela Moten, because that's really her background. She's really a numbers person, really, really a numbers. But when we start listening to the stats, man, of the wealth gaps and all of the, you know, inequalities and injustices that are happening, there are a whole other set of numbers that if we change behaviors, we could close these gaps. We could stop. We could eradicate poverty. We really, really could. It would take a lot of effort. One person couldn't do it, but collectively we could. The science is proven. It would be relatively easy for us to close the gap between wealthy and poverty. It would take a certain amount of years to do it, but collectively we could do that. If we wanted to close, if we just wanted to give underclothes to women who don't even have a decent set of underclothes, it could be done, financed for the rest of our lifetime. The numbers are there. So we just didn't want to preach and teach theory. We want to teach real practical things. And if we start doing it as a community, we can start fixing some of these problems. I just learned this, and I've got this answer up to the question is, and listen, when I said it around the country, well, the people agree with me. The power belongs to the people.
Yeah.
So we start looking for politicians to solve these problems for us, and it is already proven, the data is there, none of them are capable of doing it. The Constitution of the United States says that the power rests with the people, right? But then the people need to be empowered to do that, to take care of our home. The pursuit of happiness is not a movie. That's in our Constitution. It's a constitutional right. It's a campaign, actually, right? But it comes with a lot of data, man. And a lot of us don't have the data to grow our businesses. We don't know the demographics of who lives where, and so we don't set any targets. And we just do stuff all over the place, man, and we expect these phenomenal results. So, you know, that's another aspect that we added to our business, is to make sure that we are doing everything that what we prove, we've got the evidence. Our methodologies, we know, work. They're proven. Our strategies work for sure.
Right. Right. But you're right, though. The numbers do not lie. And I just say that with, looking at different investments that people want to make, or looking at different trades that people want to make. Like Thursday and Friday was kind of rough for the market. I was looking at charts, looking at all the information, but there's still money to be made if you know what you're looking at. And I know I'm learning. I understand the concept of shorting, but being able to implement it, so I'm practicing that. But just the information was there for me to be able to, I'm looking at, I can short this stock here, I can short this stock here, I can short this stock here, but I've never done it. So, because right now I just want to get like the basics down, so that would be my next step. But just when the information is there and you can recognize it and you can see how you can implement it, it changes the whole thing. It makes things even easier. We can even talk about put that in the realm of sports, like somebody studying film, looking at tendencies, looking at different things your opponent does, and when you get out there on the field, on the court, and you recognize you can exploit it. So the information is there to help you be more successful if you ingest it and use it.
That's why I love SportsCenter better than watching sports itself, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I like sports analytics, right? If the Knicks, and I'm just saying this randomly, I'm no Knicks fan. If Knicks won 2 games in a row and then they lost the third game, you know, it ain't just because of the coincidence they lost, right? The sports analyst is going to look at averages, and they're going to say, and pick it apart with what? With numbers. Right?
Right?
Because the numbers are the real, true, telltale sign of what just happened in this game. And we kind of watch it from an entertainment perspective. That's what I'm saying. There's got to be a mindset shift, man. If we start watching everything from an entertainment perspective to the science of it and become analysts and understanding there's patterns in absolutely everything. There's a reason why everything happens in the world.
Right.
Cycles, the economic cycle, the economic shifts, all those things are, people don't like when I say this, predictable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't predict. One of the number one skills they teach if you're going to learn to trade in any asset class is a skill called market timing. And if you listen to CNBC, Bloomberg, you have these guys that say you can't time the market. That's not true. You can time the market. It's a skill, though, you have to develop. It's a combination of what you just said, technical and fundamental analysis.
Right.
Looking at the patterns of the chart, technical analysis, and using those indicators, then fundamental analysis, taking that information, who's the CEO, all those fundamental information, and applying it together to make those decisions. So the same is true with fixing our communities, man. And there's some great opportunities out there, man. I know, so now we probably going to sound like nerdy to your audience. I don't mind.
Hey,
they
should be used to that by now, because we like research over here. That's one of the biggest things that we understand is research. We quote facts, we quote statistics, all those things. So they should be conditioned by now.
Yeah. I will say we geek out pretty regularly because I'm big in numbers, like breaking down a spreadsheet or breaking down a stat sheet, or even going and digging up, you know, a random company's profile and mapping out their processes. Like, that's the type of stuff I do for fun. So, yeah, our audience, if they've been listening, and I know y'all have because we see you. Yeah, you too. they totally used to us geeking out. Don't happen often
because
y'all
be
trying to be cool, but it happens.
Trying.
Oh, my bad. Joe, thank you, cool.
Trying to flip my stuff on me.
There you go. I got
so,
it.
All right, so we're down to our final question, and this is always Pat's question. And Pat is, he's trying to keep it together, but he kind of special. So we're going to set this question up like this for him, because it's going to make him feel all warm and fuzzy on the inside. So. Let's get it.
So, usual witty retort after Joe says I'm a retard. It looks good on you, Joe. You should keep wearing it. Anyway, so if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
So if I could put knowledge in a needle, yeah, I would make everybody in my kingdom receive it.
Uh-huh.
That's what I would change. My message would be this, man. And there's a powerful African venture capitalist. His name is Busi Femuwiko. I think I said his name right. Busi Femuwiko said that the problem with Black people is what we have been, how we've been molding our mentality concerning prosperity. And he was really breaking down the crab mentality. And he said, we've always been taught, it goes back to our slavery days, there can only be one Negro, right? There was only usually like one house Negro. Everybody else did all the laborious stuff. That house Negro was usually called the Uncle Tom, right? Because he kissed up to the master. And I like that when he said that. That's kind of our mentality. Now, even with that, now that we have freedom, we still have that mentality. Right, that there can only be one. I was meditating on that same theory and thought recently on my morning run, and I thought about that episode of The Cosby Show when Theo and Cockroach were going to be on Dance Mania. And Theo and Cockroach were in the lounge, and the man said, only one of y'all can get in.
Right.
And, you know, Theo was trying to be humble by letting Cockroach in. Cockroach was like, no, Theo. And Theo was like, Cockroach, you go in. And Theo and Cockroach went in, and then Theo got upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely true, man. We prep, we see these opportunities, we got our best stuff, we put our face on, we put our game face on, and then we're usually told, only one of y'all can come in. But we don't realize the paradigm has changed. We ain't waiting for no one to tell us we can come in. We now control our destiny. But we still operate with that mentality that only one can come in. Only one of us can succeed. And so we have become, and with all the other stuff that we're dealing with, man, with all the stuff we're dealing with here in this country, we still are a big part of our own problem. It's because we do hold each other down. And if I could, as my message says, hey, stop that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everybody has an opportunity now. There ain't no house Negro no more. We don't need that. Like, there ain't just one of us need to get into Dance Mania. We can all dance together. We all can get in the house and share the benefits together. That's the message.
Now, that's a good. Once again, like I always say at every episode that we have a guest, the beauty of that question. And why we continue to ask that question and will continue moving forward is we always get a different answer from that question because it's just showing us how different people are. Some of the questions, all the questions lead back to the same goal, but it's always different answers. And that I just appreciate that so much because we get to look at it from different angles. And like you say, you would take information and inject it into the people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that would be good because, I mean, for especially our community, information has been withheld for so long. So I do really understand that behind that. So definitely appreciate that. So where can people get in contact with you? What's your website? What's your social media handles? What's the best way for people to get in contact with you?
Let me give preference to the social media. I am on a social media sabbatical right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have social media, okay? But the website is influence-me.org. Influence-me.org. And there you can reach us. Telephone number there, email is there. On Instagram, I am Eric Thomas Live. Still active on LinkedIn, very active on LinkedIn. I will not take a sabbatical from LinkedIn because I know my engagement in the marketplace happens. But Eric E.T. Thomas is the handle for LinkedIn. Eric, the letter E.T. Thomas. But, yeah, once all those stuff comes back open, you'll be able to find those links for Facebook and Twitter. I am on just right now. A time out. I personally build out some things in my life, but it's all going to be good. It's all for the benefit of the people that we serve. New products, new services that I'll be offering, all for the betterment of my people.
Right. Nah. We definitely appreciate you coming through, giving the information that you gave, because. We want to have more conversations about finance, more conversations about building wealth here on the Freedom Train podcast series. And we appreciate you for helping us get these conversations started with the information that you gave. And once again, just the time and that you've given me personally, but the time that you just gave to my audience, Pat, and everybody involved in this. So thank you. Thank you once again. We really appreciate what you do, what you bring to the table, and everything that you've done.
This is so humbling. I really bow my head in humble submission and say thank you to both of you, Brother Joseph, Brother Pat, to your listening audience. Thank you for listening to this boy who could barely read, dyslexia, just trying to make a difference and leave a legacy and a mark in the world. Thank you so much.
No problem. No problem. And I would definitely be in contact with you soon because, you know, like I said, I've been doing some things in the market and definitely got to, you and I got to sit down and have an update. But thank you, thank you, thank you. We're not going to take up no more of your time. Please enjoy the rest of your day. I know a lot, most people got tomorrow off. You know, the market is closed, so anytime you get the rest, please take that. But just thank you, thank you. And I will be in touch with you. I will be in touch with you soon.
Whenever you need me, brother, I'm here for you. Thank you again, Brother Pat.
No problem. All right. See you later.
Yes, sir.
All right. I'll give it up for Brother Eric Thomas coming through, dropping the gems on you. Get your money right. We getting our money right. We're going to be rich, Pat. We're going to be millionaires. We're going to be billionaires, Pat. Trillionaires. What's after trillion, Pat?
Gazillion.
There you go. I want to be so rich. I want to be one of the words that the kids make up. So wealthy. But you know, these are conversations you and I have offline, so definitely want to make sure we bring these conversations online and get it in. But man, you got any parting shots, my brother?
In your motherfucking face.
In your face. Mine this week gonna be get money, just like Junior Mafia used to say. Hey man, I am Joseph Ward. He is Patrick Irvin. This is the number one podcast out there. Oh yeah, hey man, make sure y'all download the app. Make sure you go to www.freedomtrainradio.com and download the app. Go to the Google Play Store, download the app, type in Freedom Train Radio, get that app. What else we need to tell them? Oh, yeah, so download these episodes, wherever platform, podcast platform you listening from, download these episodes, download these episodes. Say download, say download, say download these episodes. See, I turned that to a little song for y'all. Download, like, share, and comment. Y'all make sure y'all comment, talk to us so we can talk back because we like to know what our audience think about what's going on. So that's how we're doing it, man. I am, once again, I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. This is the best podcast ever in the world, Freedom Train Podcast Series. And we see y'all on the other side. Peace out.